Into the Weird and the Long Box of Darkness present Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, the review. Hi there, weirdos and horror fans. Welcome back to the Long Box of Darkness and Into the Weird. That's right, we're conjoining these two shows today to talk about our in-depth and spoiler-filled review of the newest MCU film, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Now, I know it's been a while. There's been a lot going on in my life. I'm not going to bore you with all that. Let me just say that I'm happy to be back podcasting and that there will definitely be more shows coming to you in the near future. That's right, Into the Weird has been revived, as well as the Long Box of Darkness. Well, I guess LOD never really went away. So, yeah, that's the news that I have for you guys, and I will talk more about that at the end of this review. So, this episode specifically will air on both the Long Box of Darkness and the Into the Weird podcast. Since I think you'd agree, the content discussed straddles the line between horror and weird superhero shenanigans nicely. So, what has been happening leading up to Doctor Strange number 2? Well, I'll avoid calling it Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness all the time, because that would lead to madness on my part. A bit of a lengthy title there. I'll just call it Doctor Strange 2. And I must admit, I have very high expectations. They were mostly met, though, by director Sam Raimi, who's one of my favorite directors, horror-wise. Fan of his other stuff, too, of course, Darkman, the Spider-Man trilogy. I went to see it last Thursday morning, and then again Saturday night. To longtime listeners of the show, you will already know that Doctor Strange and Morbius are my two favorite Marvel characters. Well, I like this film more than the first Doctor Strange. Of course, way more than the Morbius atrocity we got a couple of months back. Not a fan, unfortunately. I'm not even going to bother doing a review on that movie. Sorry about that, listeners. It's just that too many problems brings up a lot of bad associations in my mind related to one of my favorite characters. And so I'm not going to go there. I'm just going to kind of to give you a bit of a feel of how I'm going to rank this movie. I did like this Doctor Strange 2 more than the first film in the series, than Doctor Strange number 1. And I even, of course, liked it more than the Venom sequel, which I saw last year. And speaking about this year, I actually enjoyed it more than the Eternals and the Batman, which is now, of course, DC, but still superhero related. But by a narrow margin, I should say. I really enjoyed the Eternals. Lots of people were not fans of that movie. I was a fan, though. I enjoyed it because the Batman 2, I liked it, but I liked the Eternals slightly more. How do I judge that? By seeing, well, which one would I like to see again? I've seen the Eternals probably 3 times by now. The Batman I've only seen once, so that kind of tells you which one I enjoyed more. Once is enough for me when it comes to The Batman. So, you know, having mentioned that, though, this is my favorite movie so far. Within, let's say, the last 8 months of watching Superhero Fare, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, Doctor Strange 2, is definitely the best of the bunch for me personally. And why is that? Well, we'll get into that in our review. But, of course, great cast, brilliant actors all around. Benedict Cumberbatch delivers, to my mind, his best performance as Doctor Strange yet. Elizabeth Olsen does the same. I enjoyed her in this way more than even what she accomplished in WandaVision. And, of course, having said that, there's a host of other characters that show up and all played by well-known actors, some newcomers too. Everybody did a magnificent job in the way they acted. Of course, directing-wise, Sam Raimi excelled at that. Of course, there are some problems with the plot and with some sequences that I will mention later on. Still, I really enjoyed it. So I would score this movie probably a 7 out of 10, although that's not the way we're normally doing it on the Long Box of Darkness. Normally, we have like a, you know, out of 5 score, which we'll discuss how we're going to do that, the rating system later. But just to give you a bit of an idea, I gave The Eternal 6.5. I gave The Batman 6 out of 10. So this movie just slightly better than The Eternals for me, which might be a surprise to most of you. Well, I mean, I enjoyed both. I love both. This one is the better of the two. I'm still not going to go higher than 7, though, and we'll talk about why later on. So other superhero things that I've watched recently, the Moon Knight series has wrapped up. I watched that. A lot of people are raving about that online. I found that to be just okay. Slightly better than the Hawkeye series, which I watched just before that. Still not better than the Loki series, which is my favorite of the bunch so far. Also loved Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And I'm a big, big fan of WandaVision, of course. That's my second favorite series right after the Loki series. So, let's talk a little bit more about the movie itself, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Oh, you see, there I go, just driving myself to insanity. I should say Doctor Strange 2, directed by Sam Raimi, produced by Kevin Feige with a screenplay by Michael Waldron. I think he got some writing credits on the recent Loki series as well. Scored by the brilliant Danny Elfman. Wow, this is one of his best scores ever. I loved it. Fantastic stuff by Elfman. And of course, it stars the dynamic Sorcerer Supreme Benedict duo of Benedict Cumberbatch, whom we mentioned earlier, as Doctor Strange, and Benedict Wong as Just Wong. He's the new Sorcerer Supreme, as we came to realize in Spider-Man No Way Home, since, you know, Doctor Strange was on walkabout. Well, not really walkabout. He was blasted into nothingness by Thanos, became dust for 5 years. So the job went to Wong. And of course, Wanda Maximoff, again played by Elizabeth Olsen. We mentioned her too earlier. Great stuff there, acting-wise. A very emotional role this time around. Also in WandaVision, I should say. But WandaVision, she kind of had to switch up her personality based off of the particular era of TV that was being portrayed during every episode. So you didn't get any consistency. Although the last 3 episodes, I would argue against myself there. She was very consistent there. Again, very important that you must have seen WandaVision before you actually watch Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. I think that's the only way you can fully enjoy this movie. I'm sure you'd all agree with me there. So we're into spoiler-filled waters now, my friends. I am, from this point forward, going to mention a lot of things pertaining to the plot, a lot of cameos, extra characters showing up, stuff like that. So be prepared. This is a spoiler-filled review. So hope that doesn't disappoint you, but if you want, you can go and watch the movie. You have to watch it. I think you'd enjoy it if you're by any means a fan of weird stuff like all you weirdos are, I know. And you've probably already all seen it in any way. I might have been a little bit late to the party with this review. But go and watch WandaVision first and foremost, or at least the final 2 episodes. And then watch the Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, because then you'd get what you need out of this Into the Weird episode. All right, so here we go. Just to mention a little bit about WandaVision, though. At the end of WandaVision, Wanda Maximoff has become the prophesied Scarlet Witch, and she is in possession of the Darkhold. This all happened when Agatha Harkness, her enemy in that series, tried to absorb her power of reality manipulation through the Darkhold, which gives any magic wielder who controls the Darkhold or who utilizes it the power to absorb others' abilities. And apparently the spells from the Darkhold in this universe originated from Mount Wundagore. They were inscribed there by the elder demon C'thon, the demon god, C'thon, same as in the comics. And of course you might recognize Mount Wundagore, you longtime Marvel stalwarts, as the birthplace of Wanda and Pietro Maximoff in the comics. It's also, of course, the headquarters of the High Evolutionary and his animal men at one point in time, but that's not really touched upon in this movie at all. But at the end of WandaVision, we saw Wanda studying the Darkhold in a sinister setting, a cabin. Speaking about cabins, that's actually very reminiscent of the cabin in Sam Raimi's Evil Dead movies. But we'll get more into that later. And yeah, so there's a lot of Sam Raimi in here, a lot of horror. I'd say this is definitely the MCU's venture into the realm of horror. Getting Sam Raimi to direct it and just seemingly giving him free reign to do what he wanted, within limits, of course. We've also got some newcomers to the cast. I'm not going to mention everybody yet because I'll mention the cameos and guest appearances and reveals later on and who plays them. But we've got a newcomer in the form of Xochi Gomez. She plays America Chavez, which is a character from the comics. I've read her on multiple occasions. Interesting character. I did not enjoy her solo series, but I enjoyed her when she showed up in things like, you know, the Battle World stuff from the recent Secret War, or Secret Wars by Jonathan Hickman, and all of that. So, I'm aware of the character. She's not one of my favorites, but she's definitely one of the new up-and-coming younger Marvel kind of characters that are there to help the younger fans identify with one of the heroes. And I think she works. She was very good in this. She had an instant connection with Doctor Strange. They had this sort of like big brother or uncle and niece kind of dynamic going on between them. Definitely a mentor to her, and well acted by Xochi Gomez. I haven't seen her in anything else, though, but I've been pretty out of it when it comes to watching TV more widely. I've been really just centered on the Disney Plus stuff in the last 8 months. With a little bit of a viewing tangent here and there, though, I should mention, horror-wise. So we've got Xochi Gomez, and of course we've got Rachel McAdams returning as the Doc's love interest, Christine Palmer. And then we've also got Chiwetel Ejiofor as Baron Mordo, or just Mordo, Carl Mordo this time around, showing up again. He always does a bang-up job of showcasing that character. Going from a good guy to an evil character was done pretty well at the ending of the last Doctor Strange movie. I could really feel that this is a character who made a complete 180 and based off of his own values and moral code and his own philosophy. But here we don't get that Mordo particularly. We get a different Mordo. We'll talk about why later on. Of course, it's a multiverse, so you might already know what I'll be referring to here. All right. Okay, first thing, let me reiterate again that this barely qualifies as a superhero film. It's mostly horror, with that trademark Sam Raimi comedy element running rampant throughout. The title of the movie itself is a reference to H.P. Lovecraft's novella, At the Mountains of Madness. It gives a nod to Doctor Strange's connections to the Cthulhu mythos in the comics particularly. Those Cthulhu-centered stories from the early 1970s. And the Book of the Vishanti appears for the first time in the MCU. This is kind of set up as a MacGuffin, but it has its MacGuffin status snatched away later by the Darkhold, which I guess is itself a version of an evil version. At least that's the way they set it up in this film. An evil version of the Book of the Vishanti. It's sort of like its opposite. And of course, the Darkhold is based off of the Necronomicon, which was also, you know, introduced by H.P. Lovecraft in his Weird Tales. The Necronomicon, a tome that it's featured prominently in Sam Raimi's Evil Dead series. That's the whole reason for the Deadite infestation there. So, is Doctor Strange 2 Sam Raimi's Evil Dead 4? That's basically what we have to ask ourselves. And I think the answer is, why, yes. Yes, it is. I mean, we get Deadites, like I mentioned. We get reanimated corpses, giant monster, eyeball horror. This movie is just a murder fest of signature Raimi horror, really. Crazy kills later on. We'll talk about that. You won't believe your eyes if you haven't seen it yet. Well, go see it. Of course, we're already now in spoiler territory. It's got the requisite Bruce Campbell cameo, as well as the appearance of Sam Raimi's Oldsmobile Delta 88, which shows up in every single film he does. And it also takes inspiration from some recent classic horror cinema, I'd say. I'll also mention that as we go through the scenes. So, first off, the movie starts with an alternate version of the Doc. Let's call him Ponytail Strange. He's fleeing with America Chavez through an interdimensional limbo that we later learn is called the Gap Junction. Sort of similar to the Nexus of All Realities, I'm thinking, in Man-Thing, although that's in the swamps. But yeah, it sort of serves the same purpose. And America appears just basically like she does in the comics. She's got her trademark jacket with a spunky attitude. And they're pursued by what seems to be this fabric or a type of rope-based demon. It made me think a little bit of the mutant, the Abyss from the Age of Apocalypse. I think Apocalypse's son. But he also has a similar look to one of the recent demons who showed up in the series before the last Doctor Strange series debut, the one written by Mark Waid. I think showed up in the first issue. There was this layered, like, kind of fabric demon. I might be missing something from the recent comics. They might have name dropped this demon. I'm not sure, though. So, listeners, if you do know, you know, send me a voice message or, you know, write in and talk to me about it on Twitter. I might be able to mention that on the next show, correct my errors here. But, of course, their destination as they're fleeing, Ponytail Strange in America, Chavez, is this Book of the Shanti that's located on this floating pedestal in this interdimensional limbo, the Gap Junction. And they're blocked by the demon, though. They can't get to the book. Ponytail Strange then attempts to kill America by absorbing her power. And that's when we learn that this rope demon is actually after America Chavez because she possesses the power to traverse realities, to leap from one multiverse to the next, from one universe to the next. So she can traverse the multiverse. But this will apparently result in her death if Strange does absorb her power. But then he's mortally wounded by the rope demon. America's power then activates. It's probably triggered by stress, and it sucks both her and the soon-to-be corpse, Ponytail Steven, into the main MCU universe, the one we're most familiar with. So this also shows us that Ponytail Steven, there's been numerous action figures of this Steven that I've seen in toy stores. He is an asshole, like most Stephen Stranges are, because he utters that same line that we heard our Stephen say in Spider-Man No Way Home, which is, in the grand scheme of the multiverse, your sacrifice is worth more than your life, or something like that. So he's more than willing to sacrifice her for the greater good. Meanwhile, back in the main MCU universe, Stephen, our Stephen Strange, is preparing to go to his former love's Christine Palmer's wedding. Awkward. And there's a great bit where we see him getting ready, putting on his suit, trying to tie his tie, but he is unable to because of his damaged hands. So he just uses magic. And his tie is perfectly fits around his neck. So at the wedding, things get, like I mentioned, awkward because Stephen is, he wants to tell Christine something while she's happy and this is the greatest day of her life with her new husband, who's apparently a fan of Doctor Strange and wants to meet him. And there's this awkward scene where, well, they meet at the bar and he turns her water into wine. So it's a bit of a Jesus allegory there. And probably meaning that he's her savior. He wants to save her from making a mistake marrying this guy. I don't know. That's not the vibe, though, that I got afterwards. He's happy to let her go. But before he does, he wants to let her know that, well, he seems to be on the verge of telling her that he's always loved her and that he wishes something's worked out differently between them. They're sort of, well, they're not interrupted. She leaves to call her husband over to meet him. And Stephen is unable to say what he wanted to say to Christine when suddenly there's a commotion outside on the street, right outside the wedding venue. We see America Chavez being pursued, or basically it's this giant monstrous eyeball demon, which looks strangely familiar, tearing up the street outside, trying to get at America Chavez. And this thing is covered in runes. We saw runes on the rope demon in the Gap Junction as well earlier. So if you had watched WandaVision, you'd know there were runes all over the place during that show. So basically, Steven has to save the day, and he leaps off the balcony, dons his cloak of levitation, uses some magic to get into his sorceress gear, get up, and he confronts this demon, which is clearly my favorite Doctor Strange villain, Shuma Gorath, which I think I mentioned that dozens of times during the Into the Weird show. Shuma Gorath, based off of Lovecraftian monsters, love him. This, though, is not named Shuma Gorath, even though it is Shuma Gorath. This one is called Gargantos. At least that's what I've read in the credits. Online. They opted for the name Gargantos because the Shuma Gorath name is owned by the Robert E. Howard estate. Robert E. Howard, of course, created Conan the Barbarian, but he also, well, originated the name of Shuma Gorath in his short story, The Curse of the Golden Skull. So Marvel, not wanting to poke the bear here by leaving themselves open to a lawsuit, they've opted to call him by the name of a character that they already own, which is actually the Gargantos characters in the comics. As I recall, was a monster fought by Namor the Submariner. It is a giant octopus, much like Shuma Gorath appears, but I think it was controlled by the Lemurian sorcerer King Naga, who possessed the Serpent Crown there for a while. There is that octopus connection. But still, I mean, I'm very upset that they couldn't actually make this the real Shuma Gorath, but I know that was beyond their control. But barring that, they gave Gargantos here a very small role. And he's taken out by Steven, not easily, but in spectacular fashion. Wong shows up. He's learned some new moves since last we saw him. I mean, he is the Sorcerer Supreme now. There's a great battle scene involving Wong as he combines kung fu action with sorcery. There's some funny bits involving the Cloak of Levitation trying to slap an unconscious Strange awake. And of course, America Chavez is trying to hide from this demon. Eventually, Doctor Strange takes out this demon in spectacular but horrific fashion, especially for someone who despises eyeball horror but just can't look away. That's someone being me, of course, listeners, is Doctor Strange uses what I think is the spell called the Hands of Hogoth, or as I can remember from the comics, the Fists of Hogoth. He uses these giant magical hands of Hogoth to rip out a lamppost and to impale the giant eyeball of Gargantos Shuma Gorath and then rips it out of his skull. So this giant eyeball's flying down, probably crushing dozens of cars, while Shuma Gorath's body plummets down, splats into a tentacular mess on the street below. So, whoa, Sam Raimi, well done, man. He's had a lot of fun making that scene, I'm sure. The visual effects guys, too, of course. So, fantastic first scene involving our MCU universe, Stephen Strange, as he saves the life of America Chavez. But she's not so trusting of him right after the Steven that she just had, that she was accompanying through the Gap Junction, tried to kill her for her power. She pickpockets Steven's sling ring and runs away, but Wong is there. He teleports them ahead of her, and they sort of corral her and say, listen, what's going on? Where are you from? She comes clean. She says she's from the multiverse, or she's been running through the multiverse. And Doctor Strange doesn't believe her, but they take her out for a pizza. There's some people trying to take selfies of Doctor Strange. Great, but he's not that friendly towards these fans of the superhero characters. I mean, you got the Hulk posing for selfies in, what was it, Avengers Endgame. But nope, not Steven. He doesn't have time for that kind of stuff. So she says she's from the multiverse. She has the power to traverse universes, to hop from one reality to the next. And Steven says, prove it. But first they discuss some other things. She mentions that, okay, have you had experience with the multiverse? Steven says he has. He's had a recent adventure involving Spider-Man and involving the multiverse, referring to Spider-Man No Way Home. America is appalled by a superhero called Spider-Man. She asks if he shoots webs out of his butt. Doctor Strange disses Spider-Man, but says, maybe. So, a lot of bug-themed heroes that gets dissed in this movie, definitely. But then eventually she proves to them that, in fact, she is from the multiverse by showing them the corpse of Ponytail Steven on a rooftop nearby, which is where they exited the gap junction, before the demon, the second demon, tracked her down. So Steven believes it now. He definitely has started to believe, because he's just seen his own dead body from an alternate universe. So he uses a nifty little spell to bury this dead Steven, this corpse of himself from another universe, beneath this rooftop in Manhattan, I presume. And then they decide, okay, they have to help this kid. Someone's after her. Someone wants to steal her power. Definitely someone evil who wants to use that power to traverse multiverses to, do all kinds of nefarious things, possibly. But before that, it's also revealed by America Chavez that dreams, because Steven mentions that he knows her. He's seen her in a dream, which is true. That's how the movie actually starts. Right before he gets ready for the wedding, he wakes up from a nightmare, and that nightmare was Ponytail Steven and America Chavez running through the gap junction, trying to escape this rope demon. So since he's dreamed of her, he asked her, how do you explain that? And she says, dreams are actually just you experiencing your other lives in other universes, the lives of your other selves in the multiverse. So that's revealed here. Now, that disturbs me a little bit, because if you go by that revelation, then basically a foe like Doctor Strange's enemy Nightmare would possibly be eliminated from Doctor Strange MCU continuity, because he won't have his own realm where dreams happen and nightmares are created by him and given to people to feed off of. So, but they might still be able to work him in somehow. I wish they do, because my third favorite Stephen Strange villain is Nightmare. But it doesn't look like likely, because that would just confuse matters or complicate matters even more. But it seems that this is the way the MCU works. Dreams are not real. They're not really part of your subconscious. They are part of your subconscious, but they're sort of your subconscious accessing the multiverse. So because they saw the runes on the demon, Shumagorath Gargantos, they theorize that it's witchcraft. There must be an evil witch involved, because witches deal in runes. They know a witch. And Doctor Strange says, that's right, we can ask Wanda Maximoff. Wanda, former Avenger, probably still an Avenger, de facto Avenger. I don't know, probably not, because of everything that happened in Westview, in WandaVision. She probably, her status as an Avenger has been revoked. But former Avenger, reliable, at least. Doctor Strange fought with her during the Thanos War in Endgame. So he decides to ask her for help to presumably track down this witch who's after America Chavez. He visits Wanda in this orchard, which is all just reality being manipulated by Wanda herself, since she's got that power. And this is where the trailer has fooled us, folks. The trailers. Judging by the trailers, before I saw the movie, I thought, oh, Wanda's going to, help Doctor Strange. They're going to go on this multiversal jaunt, have these adventures in the multiverse. She's going to help him out. They're going to encounter an evil Wanda later on, an alternate version of Wanda. No, that's not the way it shapes out. Basically, this Wanda is the villain. That's right. She's set up as the villain. At the end of WandaVision, the Darkhold has been corrupting her. She's been studying the Darkhold. Now, there's probably months that have gone by after Westview. The Darkhold has almost completely corrupted her, and it's shown her that in other realities, probably through dreams, there are Wandas with children. The two children she lost during the WandaVision series, Speed and Wiccan, of course, which they are in the comics, which they will eventually become from the Young Avengers. And of course, this is also according to the 80s comics when she lost her kids. They were never real, really, just like in the WandaVision series. And this has severely affected her. So this is Wanda's House of M moment, or Avengers Disassembled moment, I should say. And she has now become almost completely evil. I would say 99% evil. The Darkhold has thoroughly corrupted her. There is still a small sliver of goodness within her, but that little sliver is probably just the love she has for her kids. But there's a twisted love, because she's willing to kill America Chavez, a kid herself, absorb her powers. This is what Steven finds out while they're in this orchard, well, this orchard that has now been turned by Wanda into this apocalyptic looking, you know, arcane wasteland. And she reveals to him her plan. Her plan is to kill America Chavez, absorb her power, traverse the multiverse to a reality where the Wanda of that other reality has her two children as part of her family. Kill that Wanda and take her place. Essentially, that's what she wants. Disturbing. Steven realizes this. He realizes this power that Wanda contains is going to take all of the magic of Kamar-Taj to combat. He refuses her. He returns back to Kamar-Taj, but she gives him a bit of a ultimatum. She says, when I come to Kamar-Taj, you better deliver America Chavez up to me. Steven's unwilling to do so. He explains it to Wong, who's now the Sorcerer Supreme. Wong is freaked out because the Scarlet Witch is prophesied by the many, many magical tomes. And since he used to be a librarian, he knows these prophecies better than most. And the Scarlet Witch is a being of unfathomable magic, I think he says. So she can alter reality. Basically got the power of the Reality Stone coupled with the magic of the Darkhold. So, more powerful by a huge order of magnitude here. And they get ready to defend Kamar-Taj. And this leads to a very interesting battle. Not the best battle in the movie so far, but a pretty spectacular one at that. We see the Scarlet Witch arriving in this giant black cloud. Steven goes up to meet her. All of Kamar-Taj is arraigned against her, protecting America Chavez. We've even got the keepers of the other sanctums from Hong Kong and so forth. They're all shown up to help defend. They've left their sanctums unguarded just to defend Kamar-Taj against the Scarlet Witch. And they prove no match for her. So this definitively answers the question, who's the most powerful Avenger? It's definitely Wanda. She almost killed Thanos during Endgame. And later we'll see, I mean, the debate was always like, is it Wanda? Is it, you know, Captain Marvel? So later we'll see that answer definitively as well. But here, definitely, you can see she takes off on all the sorcerers of Kamar-Taj and prevails against them, murdering many of them. We see her like just disintegrate this one sorcerer. And she uses her mind manipulation powers. She uses her hex bolts, everything. And then there's this fantastic, that's just the first battle. So the sorcerers have all been taken out. We're talking about hundreds of sorcerers here, completely plastered by Wanda's hex bolts as she sort of has this aerial attack pattern that she first engages in before she descends in this superhero landing. Boom! That would make Black Widow weep. And massive shockwave resulting from that. Lots of rubble everywhere. She enters Kamar-Taj and finds herself trapped in the mirror dimension. So Steven lured her in. She's in the mirror dimension. She can't seem to escape using her brute force bolts, if you can call it that, the hex bolts that she employs to destroy. She has to use the magic she learned from the Darkhold. And it works! Good God, does it work well. She uses the reflections of everything, basically, in Kamar-Taj to attack. And she takes out Master Hamir, possibly just traps him in the dark dimension, but also kills him and a couple of other people who are still defending America Chavez in the interior of Comartage. And so it's basically after she takes these people out using their reflections to hold them into the dark, into the mirror dimension, she crawls out of this gong, the reflection of this gong, in this very scary sequence, which is, it harkens to back to movies like The Exorcist, you know, with Reagan walking down the stairs, and possibly more recent fare like, let's say, Pennywise unfolding himself from a broom closet in the in Stephen King's recent It remakes. Very scary stuff, very scary, and I enjoyed it. It was really Sam Raimi showing us that, well, basically, just like people possessed by his deadites in Evil Dead, these human bodies that they possess can be contorted and grossly twisted to do almost anything and then twist themselves back into human shape, which is what Wanda does here in a horrific fashion. It's crazy. So she confronts Doctor Strange and Wong and America Chavez. They're the last two standing. Doctor Strange attacks her with this cool looking spell right after she takes out Wong. And the spell basically turns his fingertips and fingers into these Hydra heads, these serpent-like, these dragon snakes or something that attacks Wanda. And she seems to be, frightened at first, but then she uses her powers to destroy these dragon snake heads one at a time. And as she does so, Steven hisses. He's like, hiss! Jeez, I love that part. It's almost as if he was connected to these snakes. He had half become some of them as they were a part of his body that he extended to order. But she takes that out. There's no way Steven can win. But America Chavez, stressed out by what's going to happen, because the implications are, I mean, there was a funny scene with the hissing, but it's sort of, it loses its humor once you realize the implications of this scene, that basically she's now going to kill a child. Wanda is. She's going to kill America Chavez. So because of the stress of this whole imminent death, America's powers activate. That's the only control she has over her powers at the moment. They activate in moments of dire peril. And Doctor Strange leaps and tackles America through this multiversal portal in the shape of this five-pointed star, which is cheesy. I mean, it works in the comics. It's weird, even in the comics. But in this movie, it's really strange. They should just make a... Well, they couldn't have really have made a circle. Would have looked too much like one of the Sling Ring portals, I guess. But whatever. Yeah, it just looks really strange. Like, why is it in the shape of a star? But, you know, it's a comic book movie. Let's just go with it. He tackles her, Doctor Strange does, and saves her from Wanda, tumbling through myriad numbers of realities. Myriad realities as they sort of make their escape, and filled with Easter eggs, of course. I saw the Living Tribunal. I think that's right at the start of them falling through these different multiversal worlds. The Living Tribunal, definitely spotted that. And the animated universe from What If was in there. You had a universe in which they became paint. Okay, no Easter eggs there that I could see. There was a universe where they sort of, it was like a very advanced, futuristic universe. I can't remember the rest. I think I need to see it a third time if I have to really look for Easter eggs and those things. But definitely the animated version of the What If universe was there. They briefly became animated. And of course, the Living Tribunal, which I wish we had seen more of. Oh well, hopefully it'll turn up again. So at last, they reach the next part of their destination, which is where most of the latter half of the movie would be set. And this turns out to be the 838 universe. Later, we'll learn its designation. But for now, since we haven't, you know, come to that part of the story yet where the universes are numbered, even though we might already know their numbers, let's just call it the Pizza Bowl universe. So just like we're doing the Pizza Bowl rating system today, when we're going to rate this movie out of 5, this is the Pizza Bowl universe. And why am I calling it that? Well, you'll definitely know if you've seen the movie why we call this the Pizza Bowl universe. So, interesting place. Filled with vegetation and plants, but also modern skyscrapers and buildings. This is clearly a universe that has become green, possibly overcome global warming. No surprise there, because it's got no shortage of geniuses, which we'll find out about later. And then, of course, it's also a place that has technology that we definitely don't have. Like, for instance, we get a flashback sequence that tells us more about America Chavez's origin and about Steven's obsession with Christine Palmer, or with the love he shares for her, and also how that has sort of broken him psychologically and emotionally. For America Chavez is seen as they step in front of this company, which was very reminiscent to something like Total Recall, you know, the recall company from the Arnold Schwarzenegger film, the Philip K. Dick short story, where, you know, you can basically have memories that, but it's not really implanted. It's, I shouldn't equate it to Total Recall. Let's just say that it's a memory enhancement clinic where you can recall fond memories or your disturbing memories from your past crystal clear. So they step on these memory discs, and Steven sees him and Christine, young Steven and young Christine, having a dinner. She gives him a gift, this the watch that had been cracked in the accident when he destroyed his hands. And he's never fixed the watch face, because he's seen that as possibly subconsciously as himself still being scarred, still being cracked from what that crash meant for his life and what happened to him there. So it reflects his many things. It reflects his outlook on life. It reflects his subconscious. It reflects his broken ego. On America Chavez's part, she reveals her origin. Now, this is done not just to us and to her. Of course, Steven can see this as well. That's the marvel of this company that helps you to revisit your memories. It's there for everybody to see. And we see that she was born in this place called the Utopian Parallel, which in the MCU, well, in the Marvel comics, it's outside of the multiverse, but here it seems to be just another reality inside the multiverse, but it's never been expressed exactly. But there's only one America Chavez throughout the multiverse. That much has been established in this movie. And that's the reason given for why there's only one America Chavez in the comic books, because she's from a place outside the multiverse. So we see her and her moms, who are a same-sex couple. And this, in fact, has caused a lot of countries in the Middle East to ask Disney to cut out the sequence from the film, because they don't want any gay scenes in it with all their gross anti-gay laws over there. Which clearly I disagree with. But still, I mean, Disney refused, insofar as I know, they've refused to do that. Good on them. I mean, they just took on DeSantis in Florida, right? This whole don't say gay law that Disney is protesting. So good for them. If they stick to it, well done, Disney. You have my adulation that I'm going to heap on you for that. If you stick to your guns, I hope money doesn't come into play, but I'm hoping not, because Disney's got so much money that doesn't need to be a factor. Just think about what is right, Disney. And so far they've been doing that, and I'm glad of that. So America Chavez herself, in the comics, she's a gay character. She's a lesbian. And, you know, good on that. That's definitely something that, you know, we support here at Into the Weird, because, you know, gay people, lesbian people are weird, therefore they're allies of Into the Weird, so I love this part of the movie, it was great. But, unfortunately, the activation of her powers the first time ever, triggered by a bee, which is sort of like the butterfly effect, right? Something small can lead to chaos and to a sort of a domino effect that leads to big things happening. And this little bee scares her, her powers activate for the first time, and creating this portal, her two moms are sucked through the multiverse into other realities. America herself is sucked in, and she never sees the Utopian Parallel again. Her moms are lost in the multiverse, but they are alive out there somewhere. As soon as she can learn to control her power, she can go looking for them. That's implied. But right now, she's still firmly not in control of her powers. So, after all of this, there's a scene involving, of course, someone that has to show up in every Sam Raimi movie. You know who I'm talking about. Bruce Campbell, aka Ash Williams. And here he's playing a character called Pizza Papa. Or I think that's what he's called. Pizza Papa. And Bruce, of course, has also, like I say, in every Sam Raimi movie, we remember him from the first three Spider-Man films. But those scenes were great. This, though, comes off as a little bit silly. And we'll talk about why just now, but still, good to see old Bruce popping up here. It's funny. Not very funny, though, I should say. It's more like silly fun. Pizza Papa, he's upset after America steals some pizza balls. Jeez, pizza balls. In America's defense, though, she states that most food in the multiverse is free. It's only in Steven's universe that she basically sees that they have to pay for stuff. But it turns out that, no, it's the same in this universe. She's basically a thief for not paying for these pizza balls. So Pizza Papa accosts Steven. And then he also gets obsessed when he sees the Cloak of Levitation draped across Steven's shoulders, which has been damaged, by the way, by Wanda. After they leap through the portal escaping from Kamar-Taj, Wanda threw a hex bolt and burned a huge hole through the Cloak of Levitation. But he fingers this cloak, Pizza Papa does, and he says, "This looks authentic. Did you steal this cloak from the Strange Museum?" What? Doctor Strange has a museum. Wow, I love this. I love this little factoid that they've inserted into the the Pizza Bowl universe. It's kind of like the Flash's museum, you know, over at in DC, or Superman even has a museum in the 30th and 31st centuries. I love that. And I would give my third eye, you could gleefully rip my third eye out of my forehead just so that I could see that museum or walk in it, or that they could introduce it in a comic book and we could see what is in that museum. What fantastic trophies and creatures and memorabilia you can see in there related to Stephen Strange and his many, many adventures and villains and magical items. It would be amazing. So because Pizza Papa is getting physical here, he tries to spray mustard into Doctor Strange's eyes. The doc sets off a bit of a spell, curses Pizza Papa, and Bruce Campbell proceeds to slap and punch and smack his head around. It's basically like a self-mutilation spell that causes you to beat yourself up for apparently 3 weeks. This is rough, Steven. Wow, that's cruel. I mean, lots of things can go wrong there. He could seriously injure himself. He could kill himself. I mean, you keep punching yourself for 3 weeks. You're going to be dead. Well, even after an hour, you're going to be pulp. But apparently, Steven must have put a limit on the spell, though. It's not full out. And, you know, eventually we'll see what happens with Pizza Papa. But this reminded me a bit of the Vertigo, DC Vertigo comic book Preacher, which I think is also a show lately on, or has been a show on Amazon, which I didn't really watch, but the comic book Preacher is one of my favorites of all time. And there's a scene where Jesse Custer, who's got the power of the voice that will command people to do whatever he says, he forces this one member of this organization, I think it's called the Grail, this guy called Hoover, to count sand on the beach. Like, not a lot, I mean, a lot of sand. We're talking about like 3 million grains of sand or something like that. I can't remember the exact number, but basically he has to do this. He can't stop doing this, and it takes him like months, you know, piling up a little pile of 3 million grains of sand. The wind keeps blowing it, and then he has to start over, and eventually he builds a windbreak, and it's great. But this is almost as cruel as that, Stephen. Almost as cruel as Jesse Custer, and that means you're pretty damn cruel. So, that having happened, they abandon old Pizza Papa to his fate, and they head on to the only place where they think they can get some help, which is the Sanctum Sanctorum. They want to track down this reality's Doctor Strange. They find out that he's dead, though, when they see this giant statue that the city has erected of this Doctor Strange, with this plaque that says, "Doctor Strange died in the battle of against Thanos, defending our universe. And he's Earth's mightiest hero," just like an Avenger would be. Which he is in our universe, but which we'll find out he wasn't. There was never such a thing as the Avengers in this universe, I presume. There's another team, and we're going to get to them. But who is the Master of the Sanctum? Why the Sanctum? Well, the Sorcerer Supreme is none other than, of course, Karl Mordo, played by Chiwetel Ejiofor. Ejiofor. Jeez. A lot of difficult names that these actors have these days. So I'm sorry if I butchered that name, Chiwetel. It's hard. So basically, Mordo turns out to be friendly. At first, Steven's worried because the Mordo in our universe, of course, hates him and has sworn to kill all sorcerers. But this Mordo looks different, still dresses in the same colors, the green effect there. It's got long hair, nice dreads, looks very fashionable, and you can see he's got this regal bearing befitting a sorcerer supreme of this reality. So he takes Steven and America Chavez in, and he talks to them about, you know, because they mention their problem, their plight with this, with Wanda, and that she's in possession of the Darkhold. So he says, we know of the Darkhold in this universe, of course, and there are scary spells, strange and completely unbelievable things that she could do with this book. One of the things is to dreamwalk. So while she might not be able to traverse the multiverse physically, she could send her soul or her essence into another universe through spells found in the Darkhold that will allow her to dreamwalk and essentially possess the bodies of her alternate selves in order to hunt down America Chavez. So the very fact that Mordo is telling them this, we know it's going to happen, because at the same time as he's explaining this, we see it happening, possibly in real time, while he's telling them his tale of Wanda in Kamar-Taj enacting this spell, trying to possess her alternate self in the Pizza Bowl universe in order to hunt down America Chavez. And as it turns out, this alternate Wanda is happy and content. She lives with her two children. I'm just going to call them Wiccan and Speed. And they are seemingly a happy family. Fatherless, I guess. I mean, she doesn't have a husband. None that I could see. Although it might have just been at work. We don't know. It might be Vision. No, probably not. But anyhow, she does manage to make the initial attempt to possess this Wanda. But while this is happening, a student, an apprentice of Wong, as Wong is hanging there trapped by the Scarlet Witch's magics, a student that survived the initial onslaught of Kamar-Taj there sneaks in. And it seems that there's something between Wanda and this between Wong, I should say, and this female student. It seems to be either his favorite student or she had a crush on him, she loves him or something, because she sort of, they share this look when Wong realizes what the student's going to do. The student uses this presumably magical knife to destroy the Darkhold, which was just hanging there, suspended in this red web of energy emitted by the Scarlet Witch. So with the book destroyed, and the student also dies in the process, she's burned to ash. Looks like a, you know, one of those ash mummies from Pompeii. Wong is devastated by the loss of the student, but Wanda too, even more so, because now her connection with the Wanda from the Pizza Bowl universe has been severed. So now she must find another way. So she theorizes that the only way, Wong must know something about the Darkhold. This Darkhold has been destroyed, but he must know something about where did the Darkhold come from. How could she get her hands on the spell again that would allow her to dreamwalk and get to America Chavez? Wong's reluctant to tell her, but she proceeds to torture four or five of Wong's unconscious students and forcing him to eventually relent and say, okay, I will show you where the Darkhold originated. The Darkhold is actually a copy. The original spells were inscribed on the walls of Mount Wundagore, this temple situated on top of Mount Wundagore by the demon C'thon eons ago, and that is where the Darkhold was copied from. So in order to save his students from pain and death, he promises to take her there, and he in fact does with his sling ring. They travel to Mount Wundagore, where Wanda sees this temple. So briefly, this dreamwalking has been interrupted. Meanwhile, though, what's happening over in the Pizza Bowl universe? Steven and America Chavez are feeling the effects of this tea that Baron Mordo has served them. That's right! Baron Mordo used Steven's beverage weakness. And it's not like Thor, which is drink. No, no, no. This is tea. We know how he loves some good tea. And this time around, he would never say no to a cup of good tea. You know that. I mean, he didn't do that when he first met the Ancient One in Doctor Strange number one. Even though he thought that tea was spiked, it wasn't. Ironically, though, this time around, the new Sorcerer Supreme has spiked his tea. A great callback there. And they collapse into unconsciousness. Mordo says, as Steven passes out, that the most dangerous thing to the universe is not Wanda, it's actually Stephen Strange. So having found that out, the story is finally kicking into 12th gear. Meanwhile, back in the 616 universe, or I should say the regular MCU, Wanda and Wong have reached the shrine/throne room at Wundagore Mountain, and some giant demons emerge and seemingly bow to Wanda. After knocking Wong off the mountain, she studies the Dreamwalk spell of the Darkhold inscribed on the walls of Wundagore, and then she commences possessing her alternate self again in a very, very Evil Dead sequence, reminiscent of that sinister first-person force that rushes through the woods in those films, possessing hot college girls, turning them into monstrous deadites. You know what I'm talking about. All right, so Pizza Ball Wanda gets possessed, and I could have sworn there was a moment where she sort of breaks the fourth wall by looking directly at the camera and smiling evilly. I might be wrong about that, but yeah, the first time I saw the movie, I missed that. Second time I saw it, and I thought, whoa, Sam Raimi? Yep, that's definitely a Raimiism. And then Wanda flies off to find America Chavez in this Pizza Bowl universe. Now, Steven and America, as I mentioned, they've been captured by Mordo. They awaken in what seems to be the stronghold of a scientific organization, maybe the Baxter Foundation, although later on it turns out to be the headquarters of the team that sort of qualifies as this reality's Avengers. You already know which team I'm talking about. Of course, there's no Avengers in this reality. It is, in fact, the Illuminati from the Marvel comics. And I think most recently, this Illuminati can be equated to the one we found in Jonathan Hickman's New Avengers, which is sort of the second big Marvel Universe story in the comic books about involving the Illuminati, where they deal with the threat of incursions. And we'll talk more about what these incursions mean and how they will impact the future of the MCU. I think they're going to play a massive role in what is to come. So, back to this prison that Steven and America Chavez finds themselves in. It's sort of like they're stuck in these transparent, almost nigh-unbreakable glass cells. And the very first person they meet, there's these scientist types walking around, of course. Well, they meet Dr. Pizza Bowl Christine Palmer of this universe, who is a scientist for what she reveals to be the Baxter Foundation. Sound that rings a bell, doesn't it? She reveals that the main MCU, where Steven is from, is designated the 616. So earlier I called it the 616. That comes directly from Christine Palmer from this universe. Apparently, it's not the original designation, which is MCU 1, you know, 999, something like that. No, it is, in fact, the 616. The Marvel Cinematic Universe has adopted this particular designation. And she reveals that the Pizza Ball universe is called the 838 universe. So the people here are more familiar with the multiverse, possibly because of whoever is associated with the Baxter Foundation, who we'll talk about later. So she also reveals to Steven that he is dangerous because when he traverses the multiverse, he might cause what she calls incursions, which is, of course, what I mentioned earlier, talking about the New Avengers comics written by Jonathan Hickman from about 8 or 9 years ago, where these incursions happen. Two realities crash together because of some breach between them, and one reality has to be destroyed in order to save the other, or vice versa. All right, so that's the reason basically Baron Mordo drugged him and captured Steven, and they're locked up. And Christine also mentions that, of course, you have to take into account that travelers from other universes might be carrying viruses, and this made me think of the Marvel Zombies virus, which is not the way the virus spreads, I think, in the Marvel What If animated series. Although it is, I think it was a quantum virus or something like that that infected Janet Van Dyne and then spread towards that particular universe. But in here, yeah, they're definitely worried about viruses, meaning that they've had this situation crop up before. So they're in quarantine, but very briefly though, because soon Steven is called upon by these, what I'm going to call the Ultron Guard, these Ultron robots who serve as the type of sentinels around this headquarters for this 838 Universe's Avengers team. And of course, they're called the Illuminati here. There's no Avengers in this reality. And as we see the robots carting Steven off to this meeting hall or this audience chamber where he's being presented to the members of the Illuminati, we finally get the reveal. We already saw through the trailers half of these folks at least. We know Mordo's there, and we know Professor X is going to show up from the X-Men. But I was very curious to see who the rest would be. And then the first thing I thought once they brought, you know, Steven in front of the Illuminati members and we saw all of them, I was thinking, what? No Namor? No Submariner? Come on, this was a missed opportunity. We know the Submariner's going to show up in the Black Panther 2 movie, but I would have loved him to be introduced here, or a different version of him, but possibly played by the same actor who's going to play him in Black Panther 2. I don't know, I just wanted to see Namor, goddammit. But no Namor, sad to say. We get some good reveals, though. There's, like I said, Mordo. And then, big surprise, Super Soldier Captain Peggy Carter, played by Hayley Atwell. And she's very visually similar to the version that debuted in the animated What If series from a couple of months back. God, she's beautiful. I love Hayley Atwell. Then we've got Maria Rambeau, mother of Monica Rambeau, best friend of Carol Danvers, this universe's Captain Marvel. She occupies a seat on the Illuminati as well. Possibly in this universe, she was the one who absorbed the Psyche Magnetron energy released by Mar-Vell in that crash that we saw in the Captain Marvel movie. And she became the Captain Marvel of this universe, played by Lashana Lynch, the actress's name. Black Bolt shows up. Black Ragar Boltagon. And Steven, he can't believe his name. He just, you know, Steven, asshole Steven likes his quips and his insults. And this name is just ridiculous. I mean, it's great in the comics, but to actually hear it introduced by Mordo, it is a little bit crazy. But I mean, the actor's real name is Chitawel Ejiofor. So, I mean, that name's even more difficult to pronounce than Black Ragar Boltagon. All right, so great alliteration again, paying homage to Stan Lee there, of course. Ensign Mount is the actor who plays Black Bolt, and he's obviously from that horrible Inhumans TV show where he played Black Bolt, but he's also the newest Star Trek captain in Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which debuted on Paramount Plus about a week ago. I haven't seen that because, damn it, we don't have that streaming service here in Taipei. We had that. I mean, Picard is on Amazon Prime. We've got that. Why can't we get Paramount Plus? Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Sorry about that. Listeners, me whining and complaining. Okay, but then finally we get John Krasinski, Reed Richards. He's been fan cast as Reed Richards about a year or two ago, and now finally we do see him as Mr. Fantastic. All I'm going to say, shave the beard, man. He doesn't look good with a beard. Probably without a beard, he would have been more Mr. Fantastic-esque for me, although, you know, Reed does sport a beard in the recent comics, that's true. Although I think recently he's clean-shaven again. John Krasinski does not look good with that beard on. I don't know, that's just my personal opinion, though. I love the guy, though. Big Krasinski fan. I don't know, it just didn't work for me visually seeing him as Reed. Alright, so he shows up, but the final member is, of course, Professor X, accompanied by an orchestral snippet of the X-Men animated series when he enters. Yeah, that's right. The theme from the X-Men animated series is his introduction to Stephen Strange there. But like I said, I was very underwhelmed by this part of the film. I was expecting more fanfare when I saw these characters. I did not. It was more silly, almost as silly as the Pizza Papa scene, I thought. It wasn't intended to be silly, though. That's probably what disturbed me about the scene. It wasn't well done, the reveal of the characters. For instance, let me give an example. Peggy Carter, for no reason, bounces her shield off the wall, catches it. And why is this done? Well, to reveal that she's Captain America? No, this is to intimidate Steven. I'm not sure why she did that. I mean, she could have just stood there and shown off her uniform and her shield. That would have been enough. Her gigantic stature. But no, she had to ricochet the shield around the room for effect. Dramatic effect. And then after Steven makes fun of Black Bolt's full name, he shushes him with this weird Atalan sign language, which looked silly to me. I mean, the guy's got a tuning fork on his head. That already makes him look ridiculous in live action. Of course, in comic books, I never questioned the fact that there was a tuning fork on his head. Steven does, though. And of course, that's meant to reveal that even though he's a guy who flies around with a living cape and you know, he's got all kinds of strange magics, he still finds ridiculousness in the multiverse that he makes fun of, which is ironic. And then, of course, we've got Reed, who arrives in what seems to be a Doctor Doom time travel teleportation square, which we see in the early Fantastic Four comics from the 60s and also later on. So he's appropriated the technology from Doom, or he conceived in this universe, I don't know. And of course, Maria Marvel, Captain Marvel, Maria Rambeau, she glares at Steven imperiously. Doesn't do much, though, but she's the more realistic of the bunch, I think, with her reaction, her introduction to Steven. She doesn't have to display her fancy cosmic powers at all. And Mordo just continues to pace around relentlessly, which is also strange. Professor X, though, for me, stole the show. He arrives fashionably late. He redeems the silliness of this Illuminati reveal a little bit for me. It's a jaw-dropping scene when he shows up in that yellow hovering wheelchair, made famous by Jim Lee, in fact, before the X-Men animated show aired. But, you know, I associate it now with the X-Men animated series, of course. But like I said, where's Namor? If Namor was there, it would have completely made the scene worth it, for me personally. Anyway, so missed opportunity there in my mind. I would have loved to even have seen some Wakandan representation too. Maybe Shuri, or even a good version of Killmonger in this universe. Who knows? But they didn't do that. Still, I'm happy with what we got. It's just, it wasn't as epic or jaw-dropping as I wanted it to be. And of course, they explain to Steven why he's been imprisoned, why he's been brought before them as a prisoner. They mention the fact that, you know, the incursions happen when people traverse the multiverse, and it seems that this universe's Steven was one of the founders of the Illuminati, expressly to stop beings like Thanos, but this Steven from the 838 specifically caused an incursion through his use of the Darkhold. So he might have been dreamwalking. Mordo has warned them when he discussed it over the drug tea earlier, in a previous scene, that the dreamwalking powers granted by the Darkhold does in fact have the potential to cause incursions. And because of that, they judged the Steven of the 838 universe, and even though he sort of redeemed himself by using the Darkhold to help them defeat Thanos in this reality, they still opted to execute him via Black Bolt's destructive whisper. And this is all shown in flashback scene, of course, from Professor X sort of projecting it into 616 Steven's brain. And that's where we see that the Steven from this universe was obviously a wielder of the Darkhold, with his blackened finger, similar to Wanda's after she started wielding the Darkhold, and Agatha Harkness in the WandaVision series, showing these blackened fingertips, which seems to be an after effect of using the Darkhold. So after that, though, during actually this meeting between Steven, before he's judged or sentenced or for execution, probably, Wanda arrives. This is possessed Wanda, and she completely devastates the Ultron Guard and then proceeds to absolutely humiliate the Illuminati. She basically slaughters them each in turn in ridiculously creative ways, First up is Black Bolt. You know, as the Illuminati confronts her, they know the Ultron Guard is no match for her. They show up in full force, all except for Charles, who hangs back. This is also where we get the reveal of Mr. Fantastic trying to talk Wanda down by mentioning that he's got a wife and a family, obviously meaning Sue Richards, the Invisible Woman, as well as his kids, which could be both Valeria and, of course, Franklin Richards. But it doesn't work. In a very scary, almost psychopathic sentence, she says that, well, if they've got a mother, then, you know, they don't need you around, do they? They've got someone to take care of them. And then before she takes out Mr. Fantastic, though, Black Bolt is killed. She literally erases his mouth. So while he tries to whisper, I think his power's turned inwards and his brain is liquefied, his skull caves in, blood pools out of his eyes, dead in a horrific fashion. And Mr. Fantastic is unraveled and his head explodes at the end of the unraveling. Horrific. Which leaves only Peggy Carter, Captain Carter, and Maria Rambeau, Captain Marvel, to take on Wanda. And Peggy Carter dies an ignominious death, I would say. She dies similarly to the way the zombie Captain America died in the Marvel What If series, which is that Wanda hurls the shield back at Peggy, basically disemboweling her, really. Or even severing her body in twain, cutting it in twain. It's horrible, really. But luckily, they don't show that graphically. I'd love to see that, but because it's Peggy Carter, not so much. I love her too much to see her maimed. So thank goodness they did not show everything there. But then we get the best fight, I think, of the entire film, which is basically, I mean, this whole fight is the best sequence. It's even better than the Kamar-Taj war from about, you know, the first half of the movie. Here, though, we get Maria Rambeau, Captain Marvel, proving almost a match for the Scarlet Witch. But I think we know now who's the most powerful Avenger of all, and that is Wanda, because she does manage to beat Captain Marvel in a fair fight, collapsing the statue on top of her, crushing her to death. And that's it. That's Wanda taking out the Illuminati, lickety split. But after that, of course, Steven, he takes out Mordo with some psychological manipulation. They're playing on Mordo's jealousy of him, and he initiates a Kung Fu fight sequence with Mordo. By the way, Steven can't use his magic because of manacles that sort of dampen his powers. He manages to put one of them on Mordo's wrist, which is great. This is what I love about Doctor Strange, him, even without his magic powers, thinking his way out of a tight spot. And he beats Mordo, manages to escape, and joins up with Christine Palmer, who, she and America Chavez have managed to flee from Wanda successfully. America has found that her multiversal powers are not limited to just traversing the multiverse. She can also release some kind of a energy and a punch that, I think in the comics it's a kick, where she kicks universes open, but here she can sort of punch with multiversal energy that shatters objects and also possibly what opens multiverses. Her punch is strong enough to tear, rip a reality open. And they join up with Steven. They mention that Wanda's unstoppable, but Christine, though, reveals to them that the Steven of this universe had a secret portal to the Gap Junction, where we know the Book of the Shanti is located, and that the Book of the Shanti will, in fact, give any sorcerer the means to defeat any foe. And they head towards that because that's their only hope at this point. Wanda, though, she's channeling Carrie White here from the Stephen King novel. Really, I mean, this is Carrie bloodied at the prom. No prom here for Wanda, though, but she's suffering from a cut on her forehead, blood all over her face. Not quite as copious as you'd find in the Carrie movie or in the novel, but she has a limp because she got hurt during this fight with the Ultrons and with the Illuminati. Very superficially wounded, though. She shuffles through these corridors on bare feet, you know, ignoring the glass strewn everywhere. I mean, this is not her body, by the way. That's probably why. And this is a very Raimi-esque sequence because he loves showing possessed people, normally possessed by deadites, ignoring all manners of bodily harm. And that adds to the horror here. So Wanda, intent on getting America Chavez, she's very close now, to getting her kids back. She's not going to give up, and still possibly even more powerful than ever because she's so motivated. She follows them in this sequence of horror where they're trying to flee from her, and she's just relentless. But finally, though, they do make it. They get to the Gap Junction. There's this scene where Doctor Strange has to access it with the broken watch, serving as the key that Christine gave him during that fateful dinner that we saw in that flashback. And this broken watch opens the door to the doorway to the Gap Junction. So while all this is going on, there's the scene that I neglected to mention, though. Professor X, he was the final buffer, I think, against crazed Wanda here. He tried to free the Wanda trapped within her own body from crazed Wanda, from the 616, by entering her mind. And that gave America Chavez and Christine Palmer the time they needed to escape from Wanda. However, it doesn't end well for poor Charles. He's murdered horrifically, you know, terrifyingly by Wanda here, who snaps his neck in this Battle of the Mind sequence, which is done brilliantly. I think the reason that, 838 Wanda was buried beneath rubble in this astral plane sequence was because that had happened to her as a child, possibly in this universe as well. Where the building collapsed because of Tony Stark's, you know, weapons used for terrorism, which is their MCU origin. And he's unable to free her from the rubble. And so Darkhold Wanda, evil Wanda, just takes him out, kills Professor X very ignominiously as well, similar to Peggy Carter dying and the rest of the Illuminati. Everybody died ignominiously, I should say. So after that, though, within the Gap Junction, they're trying to make it to the Book of the Vishanti. However, it doesn't work. Wanda preempts that by blasting the Book of Vishanti to shreds with a hex bolt. And that's that. They have no hope now. Wanda's too powerful. While all seems lost, she seizes control of America Chavez and her power with her mind-controlling spells. And then banishes Christine and Steven to a dead world, a world that has suffered an incursion. And she seizes America Chavez, abandons the 838 Wanda's body, and hurls her through into the 616 universe atop Mount Wundagore, where she is now ready to commence with the type of ritual to absorb America Chavez's powers and kill her. Wow, so things look pretty bleak from here on out. One thing I want to mention, though, is that this altar situated atop Mount Wundagore, the shrine type of deal that they've got going on, it's a hexagonal altar. In fact, there are hexagons all over the place, playing into the appearance of Wanda's magic being hexagonal, like Darcy, I think, the character from Thor, which showed up briefly, the scientist, I don't know her last name, I forgot. Anyway, Darcy. She showed up in WandaVision studying the hex that had enveloped Westview, and she coined the term Wanda's hexes because they're hexagonal in shape, these energy patterns. And so we see this all playing into the prophecy of the Scarlet Witch, the hexagonal altar, all these visual callbacks to Wanda's power, and she's about to sacrifice, of course, America Chavez on this altar. Doctor Strange, though, thwarts this, of course. Everything does not appear to be too bleak because Strange employs his intelligence. He does this by besting his evil third eye sporting counterpart from this dead universe where he's been banished with Christine. In a great mystic battle, this involves musical notes. I think this is one of the best scenes in the film. I said the best battle is between Wanda and the Illuminati, but I also really enjoyed this brief battle between Stephen Strange and his evil counterpart, a counterpart who is the cause of this dead world. He's caused an incursion because we see him wielding the Darkhold like a gunslinger, carrying it on his hip. And we also see this third eye, which freaked me out. It appeared on his forehead, very similar to the Eye of Agamotto attaching itself to Stephen's forehead in the comics, but this is more sinister. This is an organic eye. So definitely an ocular atrocity situated on this Stephen's head. And but 616 Stephen manages to kill the evil Stephen from this universe by smashing him through the Anomaly Rue window of the Sanctum Sanctorum on this dead world, impaling him on a spiked fence below. Again, playing into the horror here. Very little superheroics in this movie. Definitely more horror. Alright, so the only way that Stephen can then traverse the multiverse to save America Chavez from Wanda in the 616 is to, in fact, also use the Darkhold, which he's taken from the dead evil Stephen from this universe, and he has to enact the same Dreamwalk spell that Wanda used to possess her 838 counterpart. Stephen then uses the same spell to possess, conveniently, the dead body of Ponytail Stephen, or as some people on the internet call him, Defender Stephen, because he sports the costume that I guess Stephen once sported in the new Defender series. I'm not a big fan of that costume. It looks great in the movie, but you know, just stick to the classic Doctor Strange look, please. But if it's a multiversal counterpart, I'm completely fine with that. Change the costume, give him blue energy rings around his hands instead of, you know, yellow. I don't care. So this corpse Stephen, Ponytail Stephen, buried atop this Manhattan rooftop, he awakens, and this is again Evil Dead 4, man. The corpse Stephen, the zombie Stephen, let's call him Zombie Stephen, uses a sling ring to travel to Mount Wundagore. But then he's assaulted by the spirits of the dead in both universes. This is apparently in retaliation for violating the laws of the dead. So Christine Palmer saves 616 Stephen in the dead universe from these spirits by using the brazier of Bomb Galliath. Now, this brazier showed up in Doctor Strange 1. Remember, Doctor Strange, in his fight with Cassellus before he got the Cloak of Levitation, he, you know, handled this brazier and tried to blast Cassellus with it, but he didn't know how to use it. Apparently, you have to light it with a candle, which produces this cannonball effect. Christine, though, from the 838 universe, knows exactly how to use it to destroy the spirits. Possibly 838 Stephen taught her about it. Zombie Strange, though, has more problems because he has no way to deal with the attacking spirits until Christine Palmer again comes to the rescue by whispering in 616 Stephen's ear that he should use the spirits of the damned. He's the Sorcerer Supreme. He can do it. And that's, in fact, exactly what he commences to do. He controls the spirits of the damned atop this mountaintop near Wundagore Mountain, creating a cloak of ghostly levitation out of them. They're attached to the back of his body. It looks great. It looks fantastic. They carry him to Mount Wundagore, and this will give him the edge in his final fight against Wanda. And I have a theory about this, though. I think that while Wanda became a full-blown witch and a conjurer who can call up demons like the rope, you know, demon and Shumagorath, Gargantos, Stephen became a necromancer through his use of the Darkhold. A necromancer is a sorcerer who's capable of calling up and controlling the dead, which is exactly what he does here. And then he flies atop Mount Wundagore to confront Wanda. Wong shows up too, though. He wasn't as dead as we thought when the Scarlet Witch hurled him off the mountain earlier. Together, Wong and Stephen make short work of these massive demon servants of Wanda's, and then they take on Scarlet Witch herself. America Chavez, though, turns out to be the hero of the piece. She shows up, takes control of her powers because of, working through her own trauma. And similar to Steven working through the trauma of something he mentions to evil Steven, which I'll discuss later. But she had a psychological block because she associated the use of her powers with possibly killing her parents. And so once she realizes that that is not true, that her parents are somewhere in the multiverse, they can be saved, and she can use her power to save her friends, now obviously being Steven and Wong, two people she's grown close to, she is the one who takes on the Scarlet Witch. And she at first does it with this multiversal punch that she's almost perfected by now, but she can't beat the Scarlet Witch in a brawl. What she in fact has to do is play it smart, like Steven would. She transports the Scarlet Witch from the 616 briefly, physically, to the 838 universe, to the very living room of 838 Wanda, where she is able to see the trauma she's caused this family. The two kids, Wiccan and Speed, they're just traumatized by the appearance of this evil witch who seems to assault their mom, and who in fact caused their mom to be possessed earlier. And because of the pain that these kids feel, the psychological damage she's causing him with them, with her very presence, she reasserts control of her mind and banishes the influence of the Darkhold on her soul. And good Wanda from 616, the Wanda that was in love with the Vision, the Wanda that we saw briefly just before the end of WandaVision, she resurfaces and she realizes what she's done. So then we get this fantastic scene. This is the scene that made me think that this was Elizabeth Olsen's best performance as the Scarlet Witch to date. The scene where she decides that she has to atone for what she's done, all the lives she's taken, all the lives she's ruined, all the devastation she's caused. She's broken, and the only way to do this is through a final sacrifice to make sure that no one will ever be able to wield the power of the Darkhold or the power atop Mount Wundagore again. What she in effect does is she destroys the Darkhold in every reality. Now, it's not quite clear how she did this. This is not explained in the movie, which is one of the reasons I found this movie to not be perfect, but be that what be that as it may, she's still very powerful. She can manipulate reality, and possibly through America Chavez's multiversal power, she's got access to all of the other realities too in the multiverse. So she uses her power to destroy the Darkhold, and then she collapses Mount Wundagore on top of herself, essentially killing her. Well, we think. I don't know. I mean, apparently Kevin Feige has confirmed that Wanda will return, but this might not be the Wanda from the 616. It might be a Wanda from a different universe. Who knows? In fact, it might be 838 Wanda. We don't know. This is all still just speculation on my part. So a heartfelt scene where she sacrifices herself. And then we basically get to the end of the movie. They return to Kamar-Taj and start rebuilding, and we see America, now a student of Kamar-Taj. This is possibly a few days later or a few weeks later after Wundagore Mountain collapsed. And she's a student. She says goodbye to Doctor Strange as he prepares to head back to the Sanctum in New York. And he finally bows to Sorcerer Supreme Wong, showing that now he acknowledges him as the Sorcerer Supreme. He refused to do this at the start of the movie. And then back at the Sanctum in New York, he fixes his watch, the watch that Christine gave him, the one that got cracked in the accident that ruined his hands. And so he also metaphorically fixes his broken heart. And he's over Christine because he's realized that they'll never be together. But he managed to tell 838 Christine that he's always loved her. That's what he tried to tell 616 Christine at her wedding, which would have been very inappropriate. But he needed to do that to overcome this inner torment of his. And this also ties in with what he told evil Stephen Strange when he met him in the dying universe earlier, before their musical battle. He mentioned that in order to prove that he is an actual Stephen Strange from the multiverse, he told dead Stephen Strange the secret that only a Doctor Strange would know, which is that the reason he is always wanting to hold the knife, wanting to be in the driver's seat of the car that's going to save the universe, is that his sister died on an icy lake, drowned in the lake by falling through the ice when he was a kid, and he was unable to save her. And that has sort of created this complex in his mind where he has to be the hero. He has to always be the person taking responsibility for this burden of saving everyone from everything. It's almost like his Tony Stark complex too, where Tony wanted to build this armor around the world. He couldn't save his parents, but now with the Iron Man technology, he could. Steven is similar. And that's probably why he and Tony had a lot of friction between them, because they saw sort of a reflection, a distorted reflection of themselves in each other. Tony from the viewpoint of science, Steven from the viewpoint of magic, but still very similar, very arrogant, similar personalities. And Steven's now overcome all of that. And we see him then seemingly happy. You know, he's put the affairs of the New York Sanctum in order. He takes a stroll down Bleecker Street outside the Sanctum Sanctorum. As he crosses the a road, though, he suddenly collapses in agony, and a third eye manifests itself on his forehead, like the third eye from the evil Doctor Strange who wielded the Darkhold. This is clearly the Darkhold's power in Steven's body sort of revealing itself. Now, this could have many implications for Steven in the MCU. It could be that he's possessed by the Darkhold, or it could be that he has retained a portion of the Darkhold's power, but since the Darkhold doesn't exist anymore, he's free of its influence. Whatever the case, this makes him more powerful than ever. And I kind of like it, even though I'm freaked out by eyeballs appearing anywhere, you know, where they shouldn't. I'm curious to see where this goes, so very happy with this little reveal here. Either way, yikes, eyeball on Steven's head, which shows up again later, because we see a mid-credit scene. Now, this mid-credit scene's got everybody all over the internet talking. And what we basically see is my fellow South African, most beautiful woman in the world, Charlize Theron, as the maid of mysticism herself, Clea. She shows up while Steven has seemingly recovered from having this third eye manifested on his forehead. This could be a couple of days later, it could be a couple of weeks later, we don't know. But she shows up in the middle of New York during another Steven stroll down Bleecker Street. I'm not quite sure where, but she literally shows up and just says, "You, Steven Strange, you've caused an incursion. I need you to come with me to set things right. You're coming with me whether you like it or not." Steven, though, takes one look at Clea. He even uses his third eye to get a good look at her. Decides that, wowza, this girl is the girl of his dreams. Dreams don't exist in the multiverse, I guess, but basically Clea shows up, uses what seems to be a psi blade, you know, similar to the blades Psylocke uses, but let's say a magical purple blade. She's dressed in her traditional Clea costume from the comic books, and she cuts open a hole in reality to what appears to be the dark dimension and tells Steven, "Hop right in, man." Not in those words, of course. And they both go on a multiversal adventure together. And I did like the scene, although I think they could have done it even better. They could have made Clea's reveal more epic rather than just having her show up and say, "You've caused an incursion. You're coming with me. You said it right." And then Steven immediately complies. It's just weird. Still, great to see Clea finally in the MCU. And Charlize Theron being Clea, I had no clue. I mean, I saw her posting on Twitter the other day where she wears a purple dress to some kind of a premiere. I guess it's a Doctor Strange premiere. And she said the cat's out of the bag. So, you know, that sort of reveals that she's Clea. I saw that pic, though, after I'd seen the movie. So I knew about it beforehand. I don't know what people made of it. I mean, that's a major spoiler before people saw the movie. She did not tag the Multiverse of Madness, you know, Doctor Strange and Multiverse of Madness tag on Twitter, though. So, yeah, it might have been over people's heads, though. But still, I'm very happy about that, and I'm happy that Charlize is in the MCU. So that's basically it. That brings us to the end of my review of Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. We're not quite done yet, because there is a final post-credit scene featuring Pizza Papa, Bruce Campbell, Ash Williams, still beating himself up. This is now after 3 weeks, presumably. He doesn't look as if he suffered much damage. I mean, a few bruises here and there. But the spell fades away. It allows Bruce Campbell to exclaim, "It's over!" Meaning, of course, the torment and suffering that Steven Spell caused him, but for us, the movie's over. So I found this funny, but again, silly fun. I waited around 7 minutes for this post-credit scene, and I don't think it was worth it. The audience around me were also disappointed, judging by their reaction to this final scene. They expected more Marvel character content. Nope, we just got Bruce Campbell in another cameo. Still, Pizza Papa, very funny, great. Silly, but I enjoyed it. It didn't detract from the overall greatness of the movie. So, what did I particularly like about Doctor Strange 2? All right, I'm going to have to say, first and foremost, the strong cast. Everybody did a fantastic job, gave their utmost acting effort to make this movie superb, acting-wise, and they did. And then, of course, the visual effects were out of this world, magical. Brilliant score by Danny Elfman really set the tone and atmosphere for this movie. And the comedic horror elements introduced by Sam Raimi, vintage Raimi, really. The horror part of this is a big draw for me. And I expected it a little bit, judging from the trailers and also the title that they slapped onto the film before I saw it. But I didn't know that it would go so far to actually eclipse the superhero elements. And it's very much like the early Doctor Strange comics, so big thumbs up for me in that regard. What I didn't like, though, about the movie was the haphazard plot. It seemed that, of course, this movie suffered from Scott Derrickson being the director at first, and then he left the project, and then Sam Raimi came on, and they started filming apparently without having a full script. So, of course, they sort of made it up as they went along. Not completely, but that was a factor. So the plot was all over the place. It seemed that they had to keep introducing these Deus Ex Machina sort of events or objects to further the plot. And it was a lot, but I handled it. I could accept it. I absorbed it. I internalized it. And after the first viewing, it made sense to me. The second viewing was more for this review, to see if I missed any Easter eggs that I had to put into this review. But the first viewing was enough for me in terms of understanding everything that had happened. So, successful. But it was a little bit of a wonky plot. I'm always looking at it through the eyes of someone who's accompanying me to the movie theater. Not my wife, Erin. She's pretty good at catching all kinds of Marvel references nowadays. But let's say, for instance, a friend who's, you know, he knows the Marvel universe, but or he or she, but not quite as familiar with, let's say, for instance, WandaVision or the TV shows or the comics, they would have been confused, I think. And in fact, there were quite a few audience members that I overheard as we left the theater asking some questions. But I'll get to that just now. So yeah, that's one of the cons here, really, is that you had to have seen WandaVision to make complete sense of what's been happening in this movie. Because I know everything's interconnected now, just like the comics. They've succeeded in that. It's a whole coherent universe. I love it. There are no editor's notes, though, which would be awkward in a movie to sort of remind someone to, oh, remember what happened in WandaVision? Well, that's why this is happening. It would have been too weird, and it wouldn't work. It sort of would take you out of the universe, break the spell, pardon the pun. But the grumbling I heard from audience members as we left the theater was stuff like, why is Wanda suddenly evil? And what is this Darkhold? Why did she have this Darkhold? Where did it come from? And I even heard someone say afterwards in the lobby, How does she have kids? Like, how does she even know that she had kids? Oh, because she dreamt of a universe where she had kids. How did she know that they existed in the multiverse? If she's never traveled through the multiverse, did the Darkhold reveal that? Strange, but probably. I mean, you could explain it away easily, but it wasn't explained by the movie. This is all about the audience sort of making these leaps in logic. So because of that, I think... Oh, and one more thing. They gave short shrift to Shuma Gorath. I mentioned that before. That was a major issue for me, too. He merits prime villain status. Come on. I wish they had used him in a subsequent movie. But, you know, he showed up in this, what you could almost call a villain cameo. Strange kills him easily, in my mind. They also don't explain properly, I think, why every jaunt by a Stephen Strange from the multiverse causes an incursion. So hopping realities in the Loki series, apparently, all these variants going to different timelines and different realities, that doesn't cause incursions. But Stephen doing that does. It could be because the multiverse essentially came into being during the Loki series. I mean, the main timeline, you know, was basically split into the multiverse. So after that, the incursions might be, you know, a result of the weakened dimensional walls between realities. I don't know. They're probably going to give us a better explanation later on. But they didn't in this movie, so it's a little bit strange to me. Of course, you know, America Chavez traversing realities does not cause incursions because apparently she has no other counterparts in other universes. So it could be that the mere fact that two people exist in the same universe when they're not supposed to, that could be the reason why incursions happen. Which would mean that Wanda's whole plan would have failed. I mean, the Darkhold doesn't mention incursions, does it? It mentions, though, that you have this power to possess your alternate self. So Wanda would have been the one to cause the incursion in the 838 universe if she managed to succeed in possessing or killing her other self and kidnapping her kids, which was really scary. But I could accept that part of the story. So another thing that I wish they dealt with is, well, I mean, they couldn't have done it here, no time. But what would the repercussions be for 838 Wanda? I mean, she managed to wipe out the Illuminati. It's not her fault. She was possessed. And 838 Christine Palmer might be able to smooth things over. But we've got all of the X-Men from the 838 who probably want answers. Why is Charles dead? The Inhumans might want to know why their king has been killed. The Fantastic Four. I mean, I could easily see Franklin Richards, I mean, being as powerful, possibly even more powerful than the Wanda from the 838 universe, wanting to take her on or get revenge for his dad. I don't know. That could be future storylines that they would deal with. But it's as if they just abandoned that reality, leaving Christine Palmer from 838 to go back there and just deal with that. Still, of course, that's just nitpicking now. They couldn't have logically answered it in the allotted time they had for this movie, though. But what I like is that this is clearly setting up something where incursions are going to play a big role in future events in the MCU. It could even be setting up something like Jonathan Hickman's Secret Wars, where Dr. Doom sort of compressed all the multiverse into a single reality. Or it could, of course, be setting up the next storyline involving Kang, which we saw at the end of the Loki series. So rather than Dr. Doom, it might be Kang, who's again trying to conquer all the other realities and trying to make himself the sole lord of time and all universes, thereby compressing them into one, which is what happened in the recent Secret War series by Hickman. So, you know, all of that, taking all of that into account, my ultimate verdict is that it was a fun movie. You know, I walked out of the theater both times with a spring in my step. So, not surprised, I should say. Pleasantly, my expectations were met. I'm not going to give it a very extremely high rating, though. Since we're doing the Long Box of Darkness rating system here out of 5, I'm going to give it 3.75 pizza balls out of 5. And the reason why it doesn't merit a 4 or a 4.5 or even a full 5 is because there were some parts where, I'm not a movie director, but I thought, wow, this part with the Illuminati or with you know, the reveal of Clea could have been done better. It could have been done more epically. And also the other problems that I mentioned just now. So 3.75 pizza balls out of 5. This might change, though, once I purchase the movie on Blu-ray and watch it again and again. And on Apple Movies, I'm definitely going to do that. I liked it that much. It merits countless rewatchings, I think. As a Doctor Strange fan, yeah, I'm happy with what Marvel Studios gave us this time around, and especially with Sam Raimi, what he gave us here. So, great movie, lots of fun. And I see a lot of my Twitter mutuals agree with me on this. And if you do have any thoughts, please share what you thought about Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, aka Evil Dead 4, of course. Feel free to send, you know, any feedback about the movie, whether you agree with me or disagree with me, to our email, which is at sinkintotheweird@gmail.com. You can also DM me on Twitter. I'm at intoweird or at darklongbox. And that brings us to the very end of this joint Into the Weird and Long Box of Darkness endeavor, where we discussed a weird superhero movie for Into the Weird, but also a horror-esque movie for the Long Box of Darkness fans out there. I do have to mention, though, before we go, that once again, I have to thank our unofficial sponsor, the great band Seven Kingdoms, for the use of their song In the Walls as our intro. And they're a great band. You should check them out and support them via Patreon, or check out their Facebook page. Check them out on Spotify. You can donate there to them. They're a fantastic band. They're touring a lot. They've got a new studio album out in the works, I think. Sorry, not out yet. But they've got singles out from the new album that's already in play. And they keep supporting us, and I'm going to do the same by keep supporting them in future shows. And yes, there will be future shows, like I mentioned at the beginning of this episode. Into the Weird is back. I'm going to be doing the same that we've always done, discussing Doctor Strange. It's going to be a solo show for now. And the Long Box of Darkness too. Why not? I mean, I've got all the time in the world here in Taiwan. I'm recording in the mornings. I know that's difficult for American guests and co-hosts and Australian guests and co-hosts and people to record because of the time difference. But for me, you know, I've got a lot of time. I'm going to do the solo thing from now on, and I hope you guys like it. So keep listening to Into the Weird, and I'll be back with some more Doctor Strange and Marvel Bronze Age content and some other surprises that I've got on the horizon for you folks, you weirdos out there. So once again, thanks for joining Into the Weird and the Long Box of Darkness on this comic-filled jaunt into the Multiverse of Madness. Thanks for listening, everyone. Until next time, stay weird, pleasant screams. This is Herman signing off. Bye-bye.